Well, I should say I'm going to try to record. Oh, looks like you did it. Okay. So with that, I'll introduce Leslie. Thank you.
So I'm Leslie, and I am a codependent with a drinking problem. I said that to somebody earlier, and I thought I should have saved that for everybody to hear. Anyway, I had a very magical childhood. Grew up in a small college town in New England. My dad was a college professor. And, you know, I was the kind of kid who just, you know, was always picked for whatever, you know, whenever there was a position, you know, that kind of thing. And then I got to be 11, and I hit puberty, and all hell broke loose with my parents, particularly my mom. So I had a nice grounding in codependency. And then after I graduated from college, I married like 2 weeks later, and my codependency just blossomed. I was all about being the perfect wife and, you know, thinking that whatever he did was more important than whatever I wanted to do, and so forth and so on. we were together for a total of 15 years of, you know, courting and then marriage. And in 15 years, he apologized to me once. I did all the apologizing. The one time he apologized was October 4th. 1973. And he apologized for having made a bit of a scene at the final childbirth prep class. He had chosen not to attend any of them after the first one because it was just too gross. They showed a movie. and he came back for the last one, and it was really gross. They showed a movie. But he announced he was going to be, you know, in the delivery room, and I said, well, you know, just know that since you haven't been through this class, they could throw you out. Oh, I couldn't believe it, you know. It's my child being born. I have a right to be there. And I went, okay. I had another person coaching me. But anyway, he called me the next afternoon and apologized for that. And I went into labor that afternoon, so that's how I know when it was. It was the day before my daughter was born. Anyway, we moved to California. I grew up in New England, and we lived in Philadelphia. I was there for a total of about 15 years. And we moved to California in 1978. And prior to that, I had had some problems with some serious neck pain. And I had been given a prescription for Valium by a friend. She wasn't my doctor, but she was a doctor, and she wrote the prescription, and she kept renewing the prescription. And I had friends at work. We used to share Valiums. I remember getting a call from one of my friends, and she said, I've got this gal in my office, and she really needs a Valium, and I'm out. Do you have any? And I said, sure. And, you know, so anyway. That was my drug of choice when I started. But when we moved to California, Pennsylvania was a blue law state. You couldn't buy liquor easily. It certainly wasn't available in grocery stores. You had to go to special liquor stores to get them. But I remember walking into Safeway after we moved to California and looking at that liquor aisle and thinking, oh. I was 32 at the time. And so alcoholism is really the core of my recovery story at the beginning. We separated and divorced in 81. And in 88, I was working with a therapist, and she finally put her foot down and said, I can't really help you if you don't stop drinking. You need to go to AA. So I went to AA. The very first meeting, I heard my story told. And the second meeting, I went to the El Cerrito. I can't remember whether it was an Alano Club or something else. But anyway, it was the El Cerrito Fellowship. And I was one of two women in the room. and there was one guy who was pacing in the back and being followed around by a guy who was sort of babysitting him, and there was a lot of swearing, and I just went, I'm not like that. So I kept going to the meeting in downtown San Francisco on my lunch hour, which was, had been my first meeting, once a week, and I would listen to stories. I really loved the people in that room. I loved what they had to share, and I just didn't identify. And that went on for 14 months until I threw a Christmas party, and after everybody left my house, I finished off all of the eggnog, whether it was in the bowl or in other people's cups. And I was so sick. I knew that if I moved, if I blinked, I was going to vomit all over everything. And I just had this feeling of help, you know, help me. I can't do this. And December 17th, 1989, I haven't wanted to drink since then. It's just amazing. I had been put off when I first showed up at AA. I had been put off by the all the God stuff because I had two parents. My mother was a Baptist and she took us to church. There wasn't a Baptist church in our town, but she took us to a congregational church. And, you know, so I had Sunday school and whatnot. But my dad was an avowed atheist and I had a good relationship with him and a bad one with my mother. So it seemed like a betrayal of my dad to buy into the God stuff in the 12 steps. But, you know, that was a God shot. It was really a God shot. So, God willing and the creek don't rise, I'll have 30 years of sobriety in December. So, I was in a long-term relationship for about 8.5 years, working in therapy, and not only did the gal say, you need to go to AA, but she said, I don't think you're ever going to stop drinking as long as you're with him. And I never really expected it to last as long as it did. And it turned out, I didn't know this until after we broke up, I broke up with him, that he was the adult child of an alcoholic. And he was an enabler. You know, we would go to parties or dinners with friends, and I was there trying to figure out how am I going to get more than my share of the bottle of wine. You know, what can I do to make sure that I get more than just a glass, because that's not going to be enough. But I did most of my drinking at home. So I've sobered up in 89, and it took me a very long time. I think it was 6 months or so before I asked somebody to sponsor me, and she said no, she had too many sponsees, so I let it ride for a lot longer. And I finally ended up getting a sponsor probably around 6 months. And we started working our way through the steps slowly. And I called her one day and said, you know, do you have time to talk? And she said, no, I'll call you back. And so for 6 months, I waited for my sponsor to call me back, which she didn't do. So I wasn't making any progress, really. But I got a second sponsor, and one of the things she required of me was that I had to go to 3 meetings a week. I was already doing pretty close to that because I was doing it in the city on my lunch hour, and they were every day, and it was real easy. I even went to a meeting that I always called the Reader's Digest meeting because it was a 30-minute meeting, and in 30 minutes they read the steps, the traditions, they had a speaker, and they had a discussion. It's like, wow. It was perfect because you had 15 minutes to get there, 30-minute meeting, and 15 minutes to get back to work. So it was just perfect. Anyway, so I went on doing that, and I got stalled on the sixth step with my second sponsor, and then I got stalled on the sixth step with another sponsor because I wasn't entirely ready to have God remove my defects of character, and besides, I wasn't sure there was a God. In 1997, a group of AAs came up to me after a meeting, and they kind of ganged up on me and said, you know, you really need to come with us to Al-Anon too, because you've got a lot of issues that, you know, we're hearing you share, and you've got a lot of codependency issues. And so I went, and the difference between CODA and Al-Anon, I was asked this earlier today, The difference is, in Al-Anon, you have to have a qualifier. There has to be a problem of alcoholism in a family member or a friend. So I said my mom was an alcoholic. What I didn't really know, and I learned later, was that she was the adult child of an alcoholic. Her mother was a pretty bad alcoholic, falling down drunk on the kitchen floor, kind of drunk. But I didn't know that as a kid, because we didn't live anywhere near them. But anyway, that was my qualifier. My mother liked to have a cocktail every day at the end of the day before dinner, but I never saw her drunk. So it was a bit of a misnomer. So, you know, I had an Al-Anon sponsor, and I worked steps in Al-Anon, and I was still going to AA, of course. And my friend Jean, who was doing both Al-Anon and AA, says to me, would you come speak at my CODA meeting? And I said, Gene, I can't speak at a CODA meeting. I've never been to one. And he says, oh, it's just like Al-Anon. You'll be fine. Yeah. So I went to a CODA meeting, and not realizing that this was going to become my core program, I don't remember when it was. So I can't tell you how many years I've been in CODA, because I don't remember when that first meeting was. It was probably sometime around 2000, 2001. Something like that. But I really don't know. I don't know what month. I just remember the meeting, and they asked for newcomers, is there anybody in their first, second, or third CODA meeting ever? And I go, and then I get introduced as the speaker. But anyway, I think Al-Anon is a great program for the people who have active alcoholism in their lives. I have sent sponsees there because, you know, there are things that I can't really relate to because I don't have a qualifier other than all my sober AA friends, but that doesn't count in my book. But CODA was just right for me. One thing a lot of CODA members don't know is that CODA was started by a married couple, Ken and Mary, who were both members of AA, and their marriage was falling apart. And they started CODA because they wanted to work on having a healthy and loving relationship. So a big difference between Al-Anon and CODA is it's okay to talk about having a drinking problem in CODA, whereas it's not in Al-Anon. It's really frowned on. Depends on, you know, how tough your meeting is and how by the book they are, but they really don't want to hear about problems with substances. You know. In CODA, that's okay, because the only requirement for membership in CODA is a desire for healthy and loving relationships, period. So I started doing CODA and, you know, dropped out of Al-Anon after a couple of months of getting into CODA. And it just started to change things, because for me, and I've seen so many people in AA recover with just AA, and they get happy, joyous, and free, like it says in the 12 steps in 12 traditions. You know, the 12th step in the AA 12 and 12 starts off and ends with references to the joy of living, you know, and I've seen people get that in AA, but it wasn't enough for me. Partly because I didn't know I didn't really feel like I was qualified, that I was a good enough alcoholic, because I never lost a job, I never got a DUI, I never, there was all those. Of course, the acronym YET says you're eligible too. But I knew I was a codependent. I really knew that. And I did not want to drink anymore, so I kept going to AA, even though I thought I wasn't quite a good enough AA. Fast forward, 2011, my partner and I were traveling in Italy, and we had taken 10 weeks of Italian lessons prior to going there. And we'd both been there before a couple of times, and so we weren't doing the big cities, we were doing smaller towns. Like we went to Assisi, you know, where St. Francis was, and you know, various other things. Well, we were in the Italian town of Ferraro, which had about 25,000 people, and two AA meetings a week, no CODA. I mean, you just don't find CODA that well easily. But I will always go to an AA meeting if I'm traveling and I have the, you know, works out. So we're in Ferrara. I think we were there for two nights, and one of those nights was an AA meeting. And so my partner says to me, "You said you were going to try to get to an AA meeting while we were over here, and you haven't yet," which I took to mean, "I wish you'd go to a meeting." Okay. Message received. So I go to this meeting, and it's in Italian, and I have 10 weeks of Italian. And I get there early because I wasn't sure where I was going, and there's this old timer who kind of corners me as soon as I walk in the door and wants to know all about me, but he doesn't speak English all that well. But we're communicating back and forth. They had the 12 steps and 12 traditions up on the wall in Italian, so I could point to words that I knew in the steps. And he gave me a copy of the big book in Italian when I first arrived. And so I was able to, you know, when he asked me, "Are you Catholic?" I said, "No, I'm an agnostic." I was able to open to the chapter that says we agnostics and point to agnostics. So he knew that. And he knew my Italian was pretty crappy. So, and he managed to get out of me that I had 21 years of sobriety at that point. And so I was there, and I was quite prepared not to understand most of what was going on, but I just wanted to be in the fellowship. And at the very last minute, this young woman walked in, and she had worked in the travel industry, and she spoke very good English. So the old timer appointed her to be my translator. And for a while they were stopping after anybody shared anything so that she could translate for me. And I finally said, no, I don't want this meeting to be about me. So just translate anything that, you know, if they start talking about me, you can translate that. Anyway, the old timer insisted that she share. You know, he pointed to her after about 10 people had shared. He said, "It's your turn, you share." And she started sharing with me in English. And she turned out she'd been going to AA for 6 years. She had yet to put together 30 days of sobriety. She said, I cannot do the third step. I don't believe in God." And I said, "Neither do I." And so we get into this long conversation. Everybody's sitting around listening, but it was such a moment. And I said, "The way I work the 12 steps is I turn my life over to the care of the fellowship and the steps. The steps are my higher power." And, you know, we go on, and she had told me initially that, you know, they don't do sponsors in Italy. And by the time we ended, she was saying, "I know I've got to get a sponsor. Maybe I can do this." And I walked out of there, and it was like, holy smokes. That was my spiritual awakening. What are the chances in this small town in Italy that I'm going to be here on one of two nights a week when they have a meeting, and the only person in that room who speaks English needs to hear my story? I give up. So, what to talk about? That's my recovery story. You know, I don't claim to be an agnostic anymore. I have a very loose concept of higher power. And I love that the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking or to have a healthy relationship or, you know, not to use or, you know, whatever. You don't have to sign up for anything. You don't have to sign a sobriety pledge to join AA or Narcotics Anonymous. You just don't. And thank God for that. Thank God. So I'm trying to think what I want to talk about. I guess I thought this was going to be a pure CODA meeting, so I have some things to say to the CODA members, so the rest of you can listen in. CODA is a small program. It's been around for about 30 years. Ken and Mary are still very much alive. They're probably about my age. And there aren't that many meetings, and there aren't that many people who keep coming. They don't come back. They come for a few months. They feel like they are getting the program. They certainly feel better because they've got a room they can go to that's safe to share about what's bothering them, and they do, and they get so much relief from that. But they don't get a sponsor. Or if they try to get a sponsor, they have trouble finding someone, because for a lot of Dakota people, saying no when somebody asks them to do something is part of their recovery in their minds. And they don't get to work the steps because they have so much trouble finding somebody who will help them through it, who has some experience. So one of the things I like to say is don't confuse relief with recovery. Recovery is the 12 steps and the 12 traditions. The longer I've been in these rooms, the more I appreciate the traditions. I mean, a lot of people just say, I'm doing the steps and that's enough. But man, those traditions, the longer you stay in this, the more you come to appreciate them. And I have been participating in CODA at the level of World Service for a few years, and I'm on the literature committee. We write booklets. And we just put out a new one, just got published, printed, I should say, about 3 months ago, called Traditionally Speaking. And in it, we write about how to use traditions in relationships, because steps are for a single person. The traditions are for a group, and two people make up a group. That's enough to have an AA meeting, that's enough to have a CODA meeting, that's enough to need the traditions. So I think it is so critically important to remember that. I talked about my AA sponsor requiring me to go to three meetings a week. She also required me to get into service, and she also required me to always put money in the basket, even if it was only a penny, because she wanted me to feel part of it. So a huge part of my recovery story since starting in CODA is service, because it's such a small program that if you don't say no, you can be on the board of trustees. I mean, it's that. They have so much trouble finding people who want to do service that they literally will take you on the board with almost no qualifications. I was a delegate from Northern California to the annual business meeting 1 year, and we proposed, the board had put together a policies and procedures manual, and they had listed, you know, some of the things you should consider if you wanted to be on the board. And we suggested adding that you had a sponsor and that you'd work the steps, and they rejected that. They wouldn't have had members if they had insisted on that. So. It's a program that is evolving, but it is evolving slowly. There are a lot of good people in CODA who are working really good programs, but they're definitely the exception. I was in one of my two, I do two CODA meetings and one AA meeting a week. And I continue to respect that sponsor's requirements, even though she hasn't been my sponsor for 20 years or something. More than 20, actually. But I still want to get in three meetings a week when I can. So I do that. And it's two CODA, one AA, because CODA is my core program. I am a codependent with a drinking problem, not the other way around. Where was I going with this? I'm 73, and I am, unfortunately, the daughter of somebody who developed Alzheimer's at age 74, and I seem to be drifting in that direction. So I do have senior moments quite often. But well, I'll start a new topic. I'm a great believer in doing service. Somebody had said to me one time, if you want to turbocharge your recovery, get into service. Especially in CODA, because you've got all these people who are control freaks, you know. Our first step is we admitted we were powerless over others, that our lives had become unmanageable. And, you know, we all are trying, you know, all CODA members get there because they're trying to run somebody else's life or get them to do things their way, or they're contorting themselves into something that they're not, hoping that that will keep somebody else in relationship with them. And man, is it hard to give that up. It's really hard to give that up. But, you know, we have lots of people who are control freaks, and it comes out in spades in business meetings. So that's a bit of a challenge. But I also like to sponsor, and I've done a lot of sponsoring. I don't sponsor in AA. There's so many people who are willing to sponsor in AA. I figure, you know, I need to put all my energy into the CODA people who ask me. I have a limit of 5 sponsees. I'm a good codependent. I'm currently at 7. It's hard to say no. I get so much out of sponsoring. I just can't begin to tell you how important that is to my recovery. I get to hear people who are new. I get to hear all of the problems. I get to see the problems when they come and tell me, you know, well, I have one in particular who's got real anger management problems. And, you know, every time we get together, it's, you know, well, we were fighting about this, and he did this, and he did that. And I remember hearing somebody at an Al-Anon meeting say one time, I know I'm in the wrong meeting if I listen to the pronouns and it's all third person, because it needs to be about me. It needs to be about my recovery. I need, for me, a big part of growing up in CODA has been learning to take responsibility for my actions, learning to take control of my feelings. It's not to say I don't have feelings. I have feelings all the time, but it's what do I do with them? You know, what really matters is my behavior. So by taking responsibility and saying, you know, I'm feeling angry, rather than I am angry, because I am angry is kind of labeling yourself as an angry person, and there's no cure for that. but I'm feeling anger. I don't have to yell. I don't have to throw things. I don't have to sulk. I don't have to cut somebody out of my life for days and days or permanently. If I'm feeling sad, I can be honest about that. I'm feeling sad. I'm not in a position right now to help somebody else because I need the help. So that's been really helpful, is having people in my life, sponsees primarily, who are not there yet because it reminds me of how bad it could be. This gal with the anger management issues reminds me on a weekly basis that I don't want to go down that path. I want to learn skills to manage anger. I don't want to just let her rip. And I don't care. Well, it says in the AA literature, you know, we have to be really careful as alcoholics of justified anger. You know, it's a slippery slope. We can't go down there. I needed CODA in order to not go down that slippery slope. God bless all the AAs who get it with just AA, but it wasn't for me. I needed more. I just needed more. Let's see. The other thing to talk about is the fellowship. For me, that is such a powerful force. My third AA sponsor told me a story one time about going skiing with a group of AA friends, and she got separated from the group, and she fell and twisted her knee. And the people who brought her down in the sled said, you know, what are your friends' names? We'll put a notice up for them at the foot of the lifts so that they'll know that you're here. What are their names? She said, well, you know, John and Mary and Susan. Yeah, but what are their last names? She said, these are my best friends in the whole world, and I have no idea. I can relate to that. It makes it so safe to be in these rooms and share the most awful stuff. I heard an AA speaker one time talk about killing a young couple when he was driving drunk. Where could you go to share that kind of information and not get chucked out, not get judged? It's a miracle. It really is a miracle. And for me, being able to stay close to the fellowships, my two fellowships, is an integral part of staying sober and staying happy. And for me, I take that joy of living admonition, that phrase, very seriously. If I'm not happy, I need to look at what I'm doing that's interfering with that. It's not something that's just going to come. It's not anybody's responsibility except mine. And I get there by working the steps, by talking to my sponsors. I have one in each program. And by doing service and sharing at meetings and supporting people after meetings. One of my self-appointed service positions, we don't have this as an official position in my meetings, but I consider myself to be the newcomer greeter. If there's a newcomer in the room, and nobody goes up and talks to them after the meeting, I'm there. And I just start off with, you know, are you new to 12 steps? Not are you new to CODA, but are you new to 12 steps? Because we get a lot of people in from AA and FA and Al-Anon and just all sorts of people coming in there because they're still not at the healthy and loving relationships and they know they need more. So if they're already familiar with the steps, I don't bother to educate them on that. I do like to teach. But I just ask them if they have questions. You know, do you have any questions? You know, anything you want to talk about you didn't get to share about? And just listen, you know. And that is such a gift. I remember hearing a quote one time. It was a radio show, but I copied it down. And it said, the first duty of love is to listen. And I can do that, you know. And when I'm, well, here you all are giving me that gift today, I can do that in my meetings. I can listen to the people who share. If I can be really attentive, if my mind doesn't go wandering off to what I'm going to cook for dinner or something, I can really be of service just by being there and listening and then going up afterwards and saying, I really liked your share. This is what I got out of it. You know, thank you. Anybody can do service. Making the coffee. My first job, if you will, in AA, this was before Al-Anon, before CODA, when I had the sponsor say, you got to do service, and I hadn't really worked all the steps yet, so I wasn't anywhere near 12. It was a coffee serving group. And so after the meeting, I would just jump up and run into the kitchen and start washing the coffee cups. It was service. I used to get irritated if I wasn't asked to read. Reading the 12 steps was service. Reading how it works or the traditions was service, and I needed to be doing service. I just got so hooked on that. So within CODA, there are so many opportunities for service because there's so many people who aren't willing to do it. And that's a sad thing, and yet it's enabled me to do service at levels that I couldn't imagine doing in AA. I started off being an intergroup rep, going to the local intergroup for the Bay Area, the North Bay chunk. And then I started going to Northern California CODA business meetings. And before I knew it, I was, you know, an officer. I'd volunteered to be treasurer. You know, I think that was my first position, you know. And then I spent 4 years as the vice chair and 4 more years as the chair. And after I gave up being the chair, I became a delegate. And that was supposed to be a 6-year commitment, but people kept dropping out, and I was rotated up from alternate to second delegate, first delegate, so fast that I only got 4 years of being a delegate. And I also wrote a piece that got me invited onto the literature committee. They didn't use it exactly the way I wrote it, but that's part of my recovery, is I have to learn to give that up. I'm not in control. So today I am in a very, very healthy relationship with a non-program person. We've been together 19 years this summer. Next year we are going to be moving into a retirement community in Walnut Creek that's under construction right now. They've told us that it should be available next August 2020, but they've been late on everything that they've told us in terms of deadlines, and so, you know, we expect to be in there for Christmas of 2020. We are able to stay in Walnut Creek. It's the kind of facility where if I do develop memory problems that I sometimes worry about, that they will have my back. They will take care of things. So that is a huge comfort. Both my parents did that. They were both in similar facilities when they got to be older, and it was such a gift to us as children that we didn't have to worry about placing them. They placed themselves, and it was for life. So God bless them for that. So I expect that we will be in this relationship until one of us gets carted out of the retirement community and put in a box. There's no reason to think it won't go like that, because we have the ability to laugh with each other, not at each other, but with each other. And so I can tell my partner that, you know, you won't forget, you won't believe what I forgot to do. And instead of getting mad, we laugh, you know. So what an amazing gift that is. I did not experience that in my marriage at all. I didn't see my parents experiencing that at all. I remember my mother threatening to hit me, and she was serious because I'd laughed at her, and she found that unforgivable. But now I get to laugh, and we get to laugh in these meetings. You know, you hear somebody sharing their story, and so often the response is laughter for the most awful things, but the way the person tells it, you know that they've gotten over it. They're telling you the past, but not the present. They're working towards recovery from that, and what a gift, what an amazing gift that is to everybody in the room. And it teaches me to not take life too seriously. I take the 12-step programs very seriously. They are a huge part of my life. When my partner and I meet somebody, they'll ask, you know, what do you do? And she'll rattle off this list of four or five volunteer organization jobs that she does. You know, she's worked at the Martinez Animal Shelter, and she's worked at the Lafayette Friends of the Library bookstore, and she works at a thrift store that helps raise money for John Muir Hospital, yada, yada, yada. And Leslie, what do you do? Oh, I have a lot of friends. You know? I don't want to break my anonymity. It's really hard because I spend so much time on this stuff. And you know, they ask what I do with my retirement, what I do with all my time. And I just, you know, unless it's somebody in program, I just don't feel like I want to tell them. So they must think that I sit around watching TV and like some kind of schlub or something. Let's see, what else did I want to say to the CODA people? It's very, very important to work the steps. And given that it's hard to find a sponsor, it's hard to find a way to work the steps. But one of the things that CODA people started doing at the very beginning, and a lot keep doing, is co-sponsorship, where they sponsor each other. And I've seen co-sponsorships work out beautifully because there's something about listening to somebody else that you can hear problems and remember solutions that you've heard to those problems in meetings or talking to other people in the program that you can't hear in yourself. So even if I've only got a few months of recovery, if I've been working the steps and, you know, I'm serious about wanting to work the steps, I can get with somebody who also has only a few months in the program, and together we can help each other through the steps. And it's just so critical. I mean, it just blew me away when the CODA board decided that having worked the steps shouldn't be something to even consider before getting on the board. That's just... And it shows. There have been some nasty, nasty fights. Ken and Mary, who started CODA, I understand, were kicked off the board. This is before I was in it. Before I was in CODA. But that's the story that came down. They still show up and give talks at conferences and stuff, but you know, I'm surprised that they can forgive us. But anyway... Is there time for sharing? Because I'm almost done in terms of what I want to say.
There's no time.
No time. It's just me. Okay. Well, I mean, all I can say is that working the 12 steps and paying attention to the traditions has been a huge part of my finding happiness. And I don't think that my relationship would have lasted 19 years and counting if not for the work that I've done in CODA. And I love AA, and I go to an AA meeting where usually half the people in the room have more than 20 years of recovery, and that is a gift. But I need CODA. I really need CODA. And I don't want to ever, ever lose sight of that. I don't ever want to drink, so I want to hang out with the old-timers. But I also don't want to go back down that path of misery that I was in before. So I guess I will end there. Thank you.